We're all aware that innovations like smartphones and social media can have a negative impact on our lives, but the thought of quitting these technologies can scare us into believing that we'll be left disconnected and left behind. According to Georgetown computer science professor Cal Newport, the solution isn't relying on tips and hacks to use technology less, and it isn't an outright rejection either. It's a clear, simple philosophy for our technology use. His new book is Digital Minimalism: Choosing a Focused Life in a Noisy World. In the book, he suggests focusing your online time on a small number of carefully selected activities that strongly support things that you value, allowing you to happily miss out on everything else that you don't. It's a great pleasure to welcome Cal Newport to the roundtable this morning. Cal, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
A great pleasure. Again, the name of the book, Digital Minimalism: Choosing a Focused Life in a Noisy World. So how does an associate professor of computer science at Georgetown come to write such a volume?
Well, I think if there's anyone for whom it makes sense to look closely at the intersection of technology and culture, a technologist should be high on that list. So I study technology for a living. I try to innovate technology for a living. And I thought that put me in a good position to say, why don't I look at what these things are actually doing and what's the right way to engage with them?
When it comes to those right ways to engage with them, how have you decided on what you've decided on?
Well, I'm a minimalist. And so my approach to tech is the same approach that minimalists have been taking to different parts of the human experience all the way back to the ancients, which is focus your energy on a small number of things that gives you really big returns and resist the urge to instead scatter that energy over many little different things that are each promising you their own little bits of value. And so I use technology very intentionally. I don't use as much as most people, and I think I get a lot of value out of what I do choose to focus my attention on.
But ultimately, it's up to us, right? I mean, we have to decide what is important and what isn't.
Well, this is what we haven't been doing recently. I think we've just coming out of this 10-year period of exuberance along all of these technological innovations where we essentially just haphazardly signed up for things. This looks cool. Let me buy it. This app seems kind of interesting. Let me download it. This service looks fun. Let me put my name into it. And so we just brought a lot of these things into our lives without thinking much about them. After we did so, the experiences were re-engineered to be more addictive and to make more compulsive use standard. And a lot of people are looking up now and looking at this cluttered digital life that's constantly pulling out their attention and saying, this is not what I signed up for. I haven't given this enough thought. It's time for me to start from scratch and say, what am I really trying to accomplish with the digital aspect of my life?
You make the point in the book that basically a lot of this is a return to the original vision that Steve Jobs had for the iPhone, which is far different from how we ended up using smartphones now.
Well, Jobs was a classical minimalist in the sense that he believed strongly in taking things who are important to people and making those activities even better, even more beneficial. So he never had this vision when working on the original iPhone that he wanted to change people's daily life so that they were looking at a screen all day. The original vision for the iPhone was much more clearly to take two things that people already really liked, which was listening to music, something that was very important to Jobs, and making phone calls. He wanted to take those two activities and say, I can build a beautiful device that's going to make the experience of listening to music and making phone calls even better, even more aesthetically pleasing, even more usable. I'm going to take things you really care about, and I'm going to help you get even bigger returns on them. The smartphone morphed over time into this brand new constant companion model where you look at it all day long like an air traffic controller taking in information and sending information back out into the world. That's a whole new different way of living. That's something that no one was really clamoring for. That was not something that people really wanted and just had to wait for the tech to catch up. That was foisted upon us, and it was not Jobs' original vision.
What is it about it, though, that has us becoming an air traffic controller and looking at all this information and not being able to look away?
Well, a lot of that was engineered, and Facebook really took the lead in this revolution. Essentially, what was happening is they needed their revenue numbers to get much higher before their IPO. Their IPO had to be a success because their early stage investors wanted their return. So how do they get their revenue numbers higher? Well, they re-engineered the whole Facebook experience. So instead of it being about posting information about yourself and seeing the information that your friends had posted about themselves, They changed it into the experience in which there is a constant stream of social approval indicators coming at you as the user. So likes and comments and tags of you in photos and an Instagram hearts and in Twitter retweets, but it's these social approval indicators that are always coming at you. So now every time you hit that app, there could be, like a reward on a slot machine, a larger count saying more people were just thinking about you, or here's a comment that someone had about you. That was invented to exploit our psychological vulnerabilities. Our brain has a very hard time resisting the idea that if I click on this thing, I can see information about people thinking about me. Best of case, we have a hard time not clicking. No one was clamoring for that constant stream of social approval indicator experience. It was not the original social media experience. It was contrived almost completely because it got people looking at their phone more. And if they look at their phone more, Facebook can go from a smaller market cap to $500 billion.
So you talk about in the book the 30-day digital declutter. What are we decluttering, and how will that ultimately help us transform our relationship with the technology that is in our hand?
You're decluttering the technology that you use in your personal life. So the issues about technology in work, like constant email or Slack, those are big issues, and I've written about those before, but they're separate. There's different forces at play. So the declutter at the core of minimalism is about the stuff you do in your time outside of work on your screens. And the idea here is if you want to take back control of that part of your life, sort of nibbling around the edges from the top down is not going to cut it. Just to say, well, maybe I'll get rid of this app, or maybe I'll change my notifications, that's not going to do it. You need to instead clean out the proverbial closet till it's empty, and then only bring back in the things that are really important. And so this 30-day process I talk about is essentially that. You take a step back from all of the optional technology in your personal digital life. You spend 30 days to detox from the compulsive need to click on it, and also to get back in touch with what do I really care about in my life, how do I really want to spend my time. And then when the 30 days are over, you only bring things back in if they can make a credible case that they're going to give a significant boost to one of these small number of things that you value. So it's a transition from maximalism into minimalism.
As I mentioned, you are an associate professor of computer science at Georgetown University, and as you said, it gives you great insight into write a book like this. However, with that said, when I asked you the question of what is it that draws us to our devices, and when I ask you about how our relationships strengthen if we stop liking things on Facebook and leaving comments in social media posts, this gets very psychological, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's interesting how much both psychology and philosophy even play such a big role. I mean, this is a book about technology, except for a lot of it has nothing to do with technology.
Right.
It has to do with how our brains work or what the ancients have taught us about what's necessary for a flourishing life. So when it comes to social interaction, that's a hugely psychological and neurological topic. I mean, we've evolved to be incredibly social beings. It's at the core of our success as a species. Massive amounts of our neuronal machinery is dedicated to the subtle dance of successful human social interaction, which is why we shouldn't be surprised that when, after hundreds of thousands of years of this, you have 22-year-olds in hooded sweatshirts say, let's just completely reinvent how humans socialize, we shouldn't be surprised that that's going to cause a lot of psychological issues.
Our wonderful board op, Mike Bowen, just told me that it's the first time neuronal machinery was ever used on the air. So congratulations on that.
Trademark.
Yeah, trademark. we'll give you credit for every time for the future. So if we resist liking a post, and if we resist leaving a comment on something that is put before us, your point is that we can actually strengthen a relationship. So how does that work? How do you see that playing out?
There's a clear divide between digital interaction and real-world conversation. And so real-world conversation, where there's an analog component, like right now we can hear each other's voices. We can hear the tone of voice. We can participate in limbic consonants, which is actually trying to match pacing and tonation. Or if we're in person, we can look at each other's body languages. We can look at movement of facial muscles. This is what we've evolved for. This is real-world conversation. This is very important. If we don't get this, we feel lonely, we feel unhappy, we feel anxious. Digital interaction, so text messages, likes, comments under an Instagram photo don't press those same buttons, which is why we have these large, well-done epidemiological studies in recent years that show, seemingly paradoxically, people who use social media more feel more lonely. Well, what's happening is if they use social media more, it's not that the social media is directly making them lonely, it's that they're replacing the real-world conversation with the digital variant. But the digital variant doesn't give us the same thing. It essentially doesn't count from our brain's perspective. And so this is why I say you have to be very wary about social interaction on social media, is because it's not that the actual act of clicking like or leaving a comment is bad, but if you give yourself the idea that that counts as socializing, you can paradoxically end up really lonely.
Let me ask a question, and if this is a little shaggy, I apologize, but I remember as sort of in the advent of credit cards, when credit cards were becoming very, very popular and everybody was having a credit card, and they were becoming much, much more normalized for average folk, that people would say, well, you know what, I don't want to do that, I want to pay for things, and they put their hand up and said, enough, I don't want to do it. And eventually they got left out, and you realize that you really can't do anything without a credit card. You couldn't order tickets, you couldn't get a hotel room, you couldn't do anything else. Is it similar that if we minimize to an extent and we don't have social media and we try to limit as much as we can, that in some way that we're missing out on something, or that we are not able to do daily tasks that other people can do readily?
Well, this is the core question of, is social media a fundamental technology, right? So a fundamental technology is something that becomes so ingrained in the cultural fabric that to not use it puts you at a significant outsider status in society. So the telephone, the television, the internet, in general, electricity, credit cards, these are examples of fundamental technologies that if you don't use them, it could actually put you at a sort of a significant outsider status. So the big debate right now is social media a fundamental technology, or is it in some sense a technological trend that is going to dissipate and we're going to move past? I've long been arguing that it's not a fundamental technology. Until recently, the biggest pushback on me, especially from those sort of within the sphere of influence of social media companies, has been, well, you're just being eccentric. It is a fundamental technology. You have to use it. But people have shifted on this. And I think in the last 1 or 2 years, more and more people are coming around to this idea that, well, wait a second, what's happening with these large social media companies? It's not fundamental. And if anything, it's kind of weird. They're essentially saying, okay, the internet and its ability to connect people, its ability to help you express yourself and find interesting ideas, that's too hard for you. So we're going to build our own internet within a giant walled garden that we control. We're going to have an easier internet experience. And, you know, by the way, we're going to watch everything you do and try to manipulate you and monetize you and make all this money off you. But don't worry, like the internet's too scary. It's basically AOL's pitch in the 90s. The world wide web, it's too scary. You need to be on our service. It's easier. And I think this is, people are coming to realize that this is actually this is the aberration. This notion that we have to build these giant walled gardens within the internet to give a safer internet experience is something that's not fundamental, and increasingly people are willing to step back and say, I'm ready to take the training wheels off, and I'm ready to engage with the internet without having to be within the, you know, kiddie pool that is the, say, Facebook experience. So I've long argued it's not a fundamental technology. I used to be very lonely in that. I'm now not nearly as lonely as I once was.
But I agree with everything you just said. It just seems to me that your example of AOL, but then they come up with something else. So if Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram are to go, then maybe something will come in and replace it and eventually become the next garden that we're being walled in on.
Well, this is the big question, is what is our future engagement with the social internet going to look like? And so my optimistic take on this is that the last 10 years, we've tried this model of what we need is very, very large publicly traded companies in which everyone is involved, you know, within the walled garden of those companies. And that created all of the issues that people are upset about regarding social media. Almost all of that comes from the decision to have all this interaction happen within a giant walled garden. So my optimistic prediction is, yeah, we're going to see a lot of new things, a lot of new ways to help people exploit the power of the social internet. But I think this particular way, which is let's have a $500 billion company and everyone uses their walled garden, I think that particular model is causing too much trouble, and there's too many other alternatives that could probably work just as well if we could figure them out. And so when I'm in my good moods, in my optimistic moods, I think there's going to be a lot of innovative services and tools or what have you 10 years down the line. They're going to look nothing like the sort of attention-based surveillance state that we're trying right now.
Well, I'm glad we caught you in a good mood time. That's good. And Cal Newport is an associate professor of computer science at Georgetown University. He is the author of the book, which is just fascinating. It's called Digital Minimalism, Choosing a Focused Life in a Noisy World. Cal, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Best of luck with your work.
Great. Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book, Digital Minimalism by Cal Newport. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.